360 Biz on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to another beautiful and amazing session of 360 Biz. I'm not riding alone today. I mean, I've got my boy. He's back from overseas. I mean, we missed him the other day, but I mean, his beautiful friend was here in studio on the second shelf to the right, representing him as we were doing the show. Man, how was New York, LA, Dallas, Texas, London, Paris?
It was amazing, my brother, eh?
Yeah, just tell us a little bit about that experience.
It was amazing. Let me take this opportunity to welcome all of you listeners for 360 Biz. This is CliffCentral.com. You still remember, my name is Double Homo 40. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another exciting installment of 360 Biz. I see my boy Bulanani has been holding it very much well. My brother, and I saw that video on Instagram. You know, this man goes, puts a video of that yellow door. What's that? What's the name of that door?
I'm not sure what that is, but he definitely stood in when you were not in studio.
Yeah, and
3 weeks.
It was actually, and guess what? I was about to board the plane when I saw that video. I laughed. You know, no, but it was a good one. And I mean, I've been following the show. I've been listening to podcasts. I mean, you've been doing amazing, and you've been having amazing guests, eh?
I mean, it's the bar thing that we've set.
Yeah.
And we had to make sure that we keep to that bar. And I mean, even today, the lineup is insane. We've got amazing guys that are here to educate us, demystify some of the stuff in the construction industry. You know, talking about
you're welcoming me with my industry, my brother.
Yeah, man, yeah. Definitely you're definitely going to be taking that on. We've got a beautiful lady in studio as well, Rafi, who's going to be sharing about the amazing work that she does and the opportunities she has for entrepreneurs.
Okay,
we've got guys.
I hope that interview is not in Venda, though, right?
No, it will not. It will not. And I mean, we've got an amazing gentleman as well from UJ Tandu, who will just be sharing on some of the things, just demystifying some of the things around black industrialism, the fact that it is alive, it is out there, and I mean, leads to markets and the avenues that are open to market and some of the things that we need to hash out so that we can open up doors for suppliers or black suppliers to be able to get their products onto market. Yeah.
No, definitely. I think it's a good show that you've planned. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I mean, I've been looking forward to coming back to actually sit and watch you do your action. You know, and I see, man, you've been doing well. You're on TV now. You're following me.
man.
He says you can't be on TV alone. I'm joining you. Know? I think they must put it together, a show together for us. Eh?
We should. That would be so electrical, because what we would then be doing is we'd be fusing the township elements of things with the urban elements of things, which is what you then be bringing into the show. But I mean, it's the show that we've been shooting today. It's airing in September, and just focused on giving township entrepreneurs an opportunity to speak about their businesses on a platform that is an African, not just South African, an African platform on a DSTV channel. So we're very happy about that.
You know, you're saying that, I mean, you're excluding Franz Bina here. I mean, he's not a township entrepreneur, but don't worry, my show accommodates you. So we can always definitely have you. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Mr. Franz Bina. Maybe let's give him an opportunity to actually say hi to the listeners. Tell us who he is, what is it that you do, then we can definitely move along.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. It's a privilege to be here. I represent Inyathi Construction. We're a construction company based in Swaziland, but we operate in sub-Saharan Africa. We currently have 12 subsidiaries in sub-Saharan Africa, and we offer the whole range of construction products. From roads and dams, bridges, railway lines, harbors, and then also on the building side, you know, shopping centers, schools, hospitals, the whole range. And we've grown dramatically over the last decade or so, and now we're ready to come and play with the big boys. So we're trying to play in South Africa. So.
Wow, no, definitely. Welcome, I mean, Mr. Bina. It's good to actually meet you in person. Me and you are not speaking for the first time today. I mean, last time, and you're making me feel bad, because last time, I mean, I had my suit on ready to handle you and take you on, and shame, unfortunately, you couldn't make it to studio, but I'm glad that you could make it today.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's a privilege.
No, definitely. The beautiful lady that Bulelani is talking about, say hi to our listeners. Ma'am, tell us who you are, what is it that you do?
Good afternoon. My name is Ropiwa Rabadi. I am the founder of Zonaka Unlimited.
Ropiwa Rabadi.
Ropiwa Rabadi.
Or Rabadi.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, do I need to say that with a Venda accent?
No, it's okay.
Oh, okay. No, it's fine.
I don't mind.
Oh, okay.
We host business exhibitions, seminars, private and corporate events. We also do communications and marketing. And on the 30th of July, this month, we are hosting a business expo at the Pretoria West Showground.
Okay, now we're going to talk more about that as we go along. Okay, my brother?
Hey, Doug, thanks for having me. My name is Tando. I'm from the University of Johannesburg, something called, it's a really long name, the Center for Competition, Regulation and Economic Development.
You guys are having the Nelson Mandela talk tonight, right?
We are not.
No, you are. I know.
You are. I'm missing it. Cause I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're a team of economists that specializes in kind of understanding the challenges that small businesses experience in trying to get involved in the South African economy. So we focus, in this particular work that we'll be talking about today, is focused on understanding barriers to entry in the South African economy.
Wow. No, I like that. Because very barriers to entry, it's something that definitely that is affecting us. Bulelani, you can take it along.
I mean, on this segment of the show, this is where we talk opportunities, which is what Rafiwa brought to our attention. So business expo and networking, tell us a little bit about that.
We as Zonaka Unlimited are creating a platform for entrepreneurs to come and showcase their products and their services. On the day, we will also have a lineup of speakers as well who are going to be giving us their startup experiences and how they built their brands. And a ticket is 100 rand. For those that want to come in and just experience the networking environment that we are creating on that day. And we've got very influential speakers. We've got a life coach by the name of Mr. Martin Speaker Manamela. He's a life coach, he's a motivational speaker, and he's also a counselor. He's also an author of two books, The Rejection Is Direction and Are You Married or Buried. We also have a lineup of other speakers as well. Our stalls range from 3,000 to 6,000. We've got a 3x3 stall that is going for 3,000. We also have a 6x6 stall that is going for 6,000. And we also have another option where we are giving an opportunity to startups to bring their own gazebos and only pay 1,500 so that we don't exclude anyone, because we are trying to create a platform from small businesses, medium and big.
Yeah. So now just looking at this, I mean, so many, not really so many, but quite a few of these are happening around. I mean, who are you guys really targeting? Is it startups? Is it small enterprises? Is it township entrepreneurs? Is it established organizations that are going to be on the that are going to be there on the day?
On the day, we are targeting those that are saying, "I've got dreams, I've got visions, I aspire to be an entrepreneur." We're saying, "Come and ignite the entrepreneur in you." That is where we're going to be having seminars on the day. And then we're also looking for those that are established, but they want to tap into another ground, acquire a bigger clientele. We're also catering for that. We're also catering for small businesses that want to grow and go to the next level. And yes, that's about it.
So, I mean, in terms of you, I mean, just tell us a little bit about yourself. I see you're running Zonaka Unlimited, which is a marketing and communications company. Just tell us a little bit about that. I mean, how did you get into entrepreneurship, I mean, as a young lady as yourself? And then, I mean, how are you finding it as well?
Okay, I tapped into the entrepreneurship from a very young age, growing up seeing my grandmother and my mom just selling anything to the community. And last year, I had an idea to take small businesses and put them on the map, hence why I decided to create opportunities like this, like the Business Expo. And I had many people coming to me saying that, can you please advertise this for me? Can you please? That is where the marketing came in. Then I started advertising for personal trainers. I started advertising for accounting firms. And yeah, that is where it came from.
And then, I mean, in terms of the marketing and communication space, is it just something that was purely driven by passion, or is it something that you actually studied for at school?
Okay, I studied marketing and customer service, and I also studied accounting. I'm currently busy with my investment management, BCom Business Management. But it's a really passion. It's really something that is within me. I'm a people's person. I love working with people. I love seeing businesses going somewhere, because from where I come from, people will start businesses and in no time it has died down because there's not enough marketing and there's not enough exposure.
Yeah. So
that's what we are trying to create to help out businesses out there.
Yeah, so guys, you guys have been listening. The Business Expo, a networking session is going to be happening at the Pretoria Showgrounds, right? Right.
That's correct.
How do people get in touch with you?
Okay, you can get me on Facebook at Zonaka Unlimited. Zonaka Unlimited. Or you can send me an email on rabaliropiwa@gmail.com. FHIWA@gmail.com. You can also give me a call on 060-475-5068.
Thank you very much for that. Guys, the official communication for the show today, on Twitter, we are at CliffCentral.com. Facebook, we are Cliff Central. The number for the studio is 0861-555-189. We are also on WeChat under the ID Cliff Central. Join in on the conversation. Download the app. Tell your friends about it. Share it on Facebook, Twitter. Let's join in and empower other entrepreneurs and leaders. Tando, sir. Having listened to what the young lady, I mean, they're creating platforms for young entrepreneurs. And I mean, which is some of the things that we're going to be touching on when talking with you? I mean, leads to market and ways in which we can get, these small businesses, products into market. And they've created this awesome and amazing platform. Just share a little bit about some of the info that you guys have gathered in terms of the challenges that business come across in terms of moving their products and services into a larger scale market.
Yeah, thanks, Wudan. I mean, it's a range of complex issues, and I'm sure Rupiah will tell you. Our experience is that, the South African economy is characterized by a lot of kind of concentration, if you will, in a number of key sectors. You know, think fuel, no,
it's
think
an economics. It's an economy. that is speaking.
Yeah, proper.
Yeah. I'm a lowly academic. And so it's tough to get in. There's a lot of emphasis by the state in terms of how do you get entrepreneurs in general to start becoming part of the economy. But a recent focus as well on how do you get black industrialists, as they've been termed, to participate in the economy. And so what our research sought to do really is to try to understand a little bit more in depth the experiences of firms in trying to participate in the economy. So how easy is it to get in? How easy is it to survive? How do you get your products to market? What are the kind of challenges that you face, be they, you know, regulation from government or kind of challenges imposed by those large sort of incumbent firms that are already operating in a number of our sectors? And so what the research does is it kind of looks at a cross-cut of a range of firms and sectors. So we look at, for instance, Soweto Gold in the story of beer, which is your classic black industrialist. We look at the liquid fuel sector. We look at
I'd like to cut in there. A lot of entrepreneurs ask me, what is this whole black industrialist? Could you please just break that down? What is a black industrialist?
Sure. In terms of the policy framework, it's effectively a business owned and operated by a black South African. The proposal from government then is to provide certain forms of support, particularly in terms of funding, to enable those firms to enter the economy. There's obviously certain criteria that a firm would have to meet in terms of applying for that program and being part of it, including, the potential for exports, the potential to grow in the economy, The kind of potential for employment as well, of course, which is a big focus in our country, and a number of other criteria. What we're saying really is that that's an important framework, but there's still a number of other challenges that firms, particularly new companies, and particularly your black industrialists, face in trying to really get involved in different markets.
Yeah. And then, I mean, what are some of those challenges that you guys have faced? I mean, I think one of the guys that we firmly know about here in studio is Soweto Goals. It's just pity we had them booked for one of the shows and they couldn't make it. So just run us through some of the challenges that are out there that are faced by our brothers and sisters out there.
Sure. I think there's a range of issues. I'll maybe use a couple of examples here. One example is, for instance, in the agro-processing sector, so whether you're producing dairy or poultry or wheat milling, for instance. You have a number of new black-owned firms that have, you know, established farms and established little production facilities in terms of producing, say, maize, to use a random example. However, to operate in those markets, you still kind of have to get the product to the consumer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of face a dual constraint. Firstly, you face a constraint in that often you're competing with or seeking to compete with international giants. I mean, firms that are vertically integrated, big pockets, deep pockets, if you will, that can effectively squeeze you out the market at will. In many cases, you actually rely on some of those firms for inputs while you're supposed to compete with them. On the other end of the scale, and if you can get past that, and if you can get past issues of funding and finance and skills, is the issue of how do you get your product to the shelf, right? Currently, there's kind of a preference. They say sort of eye level is buy level, right, in supermarkets. So if you can't get your product to the right level at the shelf, if at all, it means you can't actually build a brand. You can't establish a customer base. You can't over time encourage customers to adopt your product.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of barriers we're really looking at. If you are looking to open a small retail outlet, a small supermarket, you can't get into a mall currently. The current lease agreements on a number of malls basically say if we've got an anchor tenant, be it Pick and Pay, ShopRite or whatever, the lease agreement basically prohibits the entry of a competing butcher or a competing part-line store if you're a little baker or something like that, because it effectively competes directly with that incumbent giant. Which is the problem, right? Because consumers value choice. They value the option to go to the bakery and pick up this and then go to Pick and Pay and pick up their washing powder. They want choice. They want options. They want price competition. But often that's stifled by the nature of regulation and the nature of the agreements that exist in industries such as supermarkets, which we looked at in detail.
And I think, you know, touching on some of the things that you're speaking about right now, when, for instance, you look at the inception of the Mall of Africa, I think there was one point where most of the stores that had been opened upon open day were international brands and none of them were localized brands. And you also see giants like your ShopRite, your Pick and Pay, coming into the township, whereas you would have predominantly in the past had, you know, guys like your Dube supermarket, which would not have been just a storefront, but it would have been like a real supermarket, which would have died out over the years due to lack of systems or whatever the case is. But I mean, how then does, you know, from your perspective, how then does a business, a localized business, a localized entrepreneur who wants to break themselves, how does one break into the market?
Sure. William, I think you've kind of, in many ways, hinted at the answer there. I mean, the first thing and what the research shows is that it's obviously very different by sector, right? So it's different in airlines, it's different in telecoms, it's different in retail. But if we just talk about the example of retail that you've used, those lease agreements, you know, the Competition Commission has sought to kind of deal with those issues through prosecuting a case against supermarket groups, basically saying remove these leases so that you can have firms establish shops that aren't actually your usual kind of international brands or African multinationals in the case of the South African supermarket groups. They weren't able to win that case, and that kind of tells you that the current shape of our regulation in many ways isn't good enough to make it possible for people to get in, to participate, right? And this goes beyond issues of whether I can afford rent to be in a supermarket, in a mall, or whether my product is good enough, but whether I can actually get into the center. And so what we propose in many different ways, and information is on our website, is let's use existing regulation and set up the policy frameworks to be able to open up those more spaces. And this applies across sectors as well.
And then, I mean, in terms of, because, I mean, when you talk about now regulation, it, I think it's one of the conversations that we once had with Teboho in a private, in a much more private capacity, that you look at various industries, they are regulated, and the regulations are so red-taped in such a way that the barriers to entry are heavy. You can't even get in. And I think the gentleman is going to be touching on some of those things a little bit later on in the show. In terms of the engagement that you guys have had with the regulator and all this stuff, I mean, how far is the process? I mean, are we far in terms of achieving that success so that, I mean, an ordinary guy like me can say, you know what, I want to be a Starbucks. I want to develop my own Starbucks, and I want entry at a Mall of Africa, at a Southgate Mall, at a Menlay Mall. I mean, how far are we with that? I mean, are we at a 10%? And I mean, what's it really going to take for us to get to that level where we are supposed to get to in terms of those regulations and those policies?
Sure. That's a tough question. I mean, and it's tough because it's complex, and we've been trying for 22 years now, you know, since in the life of our democracy, if you will. But it starts in, I mean, to give you, it's difficult to kind of also give a scorecard of how well we're doing, right? So what we did was we said, well, let's pick examples of firms that have succeeded, such as your Fruit and Vest City, which effectively began in the early 90s saying, I see a small gap in the market for selling fruit and veg, which isn't currently catered for, and I'll sell it cheaper. And it took them years and years to be able to build up the capacity to have this kind of supermarket format that you see in the form of Food Lovers Market now. But point is, it's not easy. And so you have very few examples. And maybe that's kind of your scorecard there.
Yeah.
However, there are conversations happening. I think a number of government departments are constantly trying to think about, well, how do you change this? How do you change the rules of the game to make it possible for people to participate in the economy, in the process of generating growth, not just as labor, basically? Mm. And there are alternatives there which we do propose.
Yeah. I think Tanya, you've mentioned a couple of interesting things that I want to bring Mr. Pina on. But maybe before I bring him on, let me do this.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Last year, the CEO Sleepout was the biggest fundraising event in South Africa. This year, as a proud digital media partner for the Sympathy Sleepout, Cliff Central is challenging you to rally your colleagues in a company sleepout at your offices in support of the homeless and to raise money for education. It costs only 800 Rand to register. Visit cliffcentral.com for more info.
Attention all young leaders. Ever wondered how to go from where you are to where you want to be? It's time to take charge of your future. The Unplugged and In Charge radio show is hosting the second annual Young Leaders Seminar. It's a seminar that's relevant to the youth, original, fun, creative, and so not old-fashioned. The Young Leaders Seminar looks to bring together some of the freshest game changers and inspirational celebrity guests. Join us on the 22nd of July at 6 p.m. at the Museion Theatre of University of Pretoria. The power lineup includes Gareth Cliff, Subin Boya, the host of the Unplugged and In Charge radio show, and a few surprise celebrity guests. Get your ticket at CompuTicket for 100 Rand and get trending on hashtag YLS2016. The Young Leader Seminar, brought to you by Unplugged and In Charge NPO, in association with CliffCentral.com, because we are the ones we've been waiting for.
Choice. Sometimes you have it, and sometimes you don't. Auto Trader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. Auto Trader New Car. The choice is yours.
360 Biz on CliffCentral.com.
You are still tuned to 360 Biz. My name is Teboho Mafodi, and in studio, it's a power-packed house. If ever you've just tuned in, you've been missing on an interesting discussion that we've been having earlier on, but you're allowed to go in online on www.cliffcentral.com and go to podcast to actually download. For you to join in on the discussion, you can actually still call our studio line. It's 0861-555-189, 0861-555-189. We're on Twitter as well. Our Twitter handle is at Cliff Central. We're on Facebook as well. It's at Cliff Central. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Teboho Mafodi. Are you on Twitter, Mr. Franz Pinar?
Yes, I am.
What's your Twitter handle?
It's at Franz Pinar.
At Franz Pinar. Okay. Facebook?
Yes, the same.
Oh, okay. Okay. Ma'am?
Yes, it's at Rofwarabali on Twitter.
Okay. Facebook?
At Rofwarabali.
Oh, okay. My brother, Tande?
The handle that we're actually using for the research is hashtag open the economy.
Okay, I like that. Hashtag open the economy. Open the economy.
You can also find us at cred, at cred underscore UJ.
Okay, and yours?
I'm going to work with the cred one for now.
Oh, okay. No, I like that. Mr. Pina, I mean, Tando has made mention of a couple of interesting things before we actually went on ad break. One of the things that he made mention of is barriers to entry, in terms of, I mean, obviously accessing the market. But obviously he spoke about different sectors that has nothing to do with construction. Obviously you are in the construction space, space that is, and I mean, of which we all know that access, I mean, to smart corridors in the city are some, I mean, of the key drivers for further infrastructure growth. I mean, unlike other industries that he made mention of, I mean, the engineering and construction sector, I mean, has been slow into adapting new technologies and has certainly never undergone a major transformation through years. I mean, with that, as a result, productivity, I mean, has stagnated for over the last 40 years, or in some cases even declined. I mean, the need for broad-based and efficient economic infrastructure is not lessened, but has increased towards the importance of sustainability, I mean, in regards to the future in the industry. Would you've said earlier on, I mean, that you're trying to get onto the South African space, onto the other African market. Would you say has it been a difficult journey for you to actually tap into the space?
It's been immensely difficult. You know, and I must agree with my friend here that the barriers...
So you must underline, it's not just difficult, it's immensely difficult. So it means it must have been tough.
No, and the barriers, you know, these barriers seem insurmountable. The examples he's mentioned is in a different industry to construction, but I can identify with each one of them.
Is it?
You know, and government sits with this massive problem.
Mm-hmm.
That they've got to try and fix something, and, you know, the system fights them. The regulations, the legislation, everything sort of works against what government wants to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this in all our markets. You know that barriers exist in all industries,
mm-hmm.
and it's immensely difficult for small players to get into it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I'm so proud of her with creating a platform through just sheer effort and guts,
mm-hmm.
to say, well, we're going to do something. But the barriers that you have, the example that was mentioned of the Competition Commission that tried to take on organized business and they lost because, you know, it's the law.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly believe that unless organized business transform their own minds and decides to make a difference, and decides to come to the table and do something about this, it'll be extremely difficult for government to actually achieve something.
Mm. Can you highlight maybe some of the challenges, and particularly in your industry?
Oh, in the construction industry, you know, its financial muscle is the first thing.
Definitely.
You know, people will talk about our organization and say we're big. We're minute in the industry. Inyatsi might seem big to some entrants in the marketplace, but, you know, we're about a 1.5 billion rand a year operation. The African construction market is estimated to be $140 billion a year. So, you know, we like a speck of dust compared to that.
Yeah,
so there's a massive market.
Mm-hmm.
But the big business has the ability to demonstrate the ability to do the big projects. They have the financial muscle to provide the guarantees and the insurances and the financial instruments. And they get them cheaper than us.
Mm. I mean, what you're saying, it's something that I'm in the construction and property space myself, by the way. It's been 6 years now. And I mean, one thing that you made mention of, it's something that obviously I've been exposed to. It's like some industries, for you to actually have a taste on, you need to really have deep pockets to actually be in a position, I mean, to tackle certain challenges and overcome. I mean that. I mean, looking at Inyats, I mean, you guys have got establishment in Swaziland, South Africa, Mozambique, Namibia, Zambia, and Botswana. I mean, you shouldn't be complaining. I mean, you've spread yourself. I mean, pretty much. I mean, some of the companies you've made mention of in terms of organized business, yes, they might be big locally, but they've not really spread themselves that much. Do you think spreading yourself has an opportunity on its own that it opens up?
That's really helped us a lot, the fact that we try to penetrate other markets at the same time.
Okay.
And the rest of Africa might be slightly more accommodating.
Mm-hmm.
And because the market is so big, the opportunities are out there. So we were just fortunate and blessed to to be quite successful in our expansion program.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're not complaining in the sense that we haven't been able to achieve some things. What we're saying is that we can clearly see the barriers that small business face every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll know trying to enter the property or the development market, before a bank will lend you money, they set requirements that you can't comply with.
That's
you
true.
Just don't have the muscle. Or if they give you something, they're pricing the risk, because it is risk, so you pay more for that same service. But the other side of that coin is, when a public tender comes out, you know, everybody wants us to be the cheapest.
Mm.
How can I be the cheapest if my service providers charge me a lot more than they charge you?
Yeah.
And I've got to compete on a level playing field.
Sure.
So big business has to buy into this, but also I believe that client bodies have to demonstrate political courage to take a stand and make a difference in changing the historic environment. You know, the current contracting environment in which we operate, I sometimes say it comes from medieval times, but it's really old standard conditions of contract, stuff that comes from the 1970s and earlier, which comes from a third world baseline, and it's based on stuff that works. You know, and we know in Africa everything doesn't work all the time. The power goes off, or the internet is maybe a bit slower, or materials doesn't arrive on time, or stuff happens. We know that.
Mm.
First world conditions of contract doesn't really apply here.
Yeah,
and
no,
that creates
true.
Another barrier. You know, take a simple thing like payments. We know in our markets, you know, if our internet goes off, our clients also goes off.
Mm.
So then the client might struggle to pay us on time, and it creates challenges for us, where the bigger guys with a bigger muscle can bridge some of these things, but it excludes a lot of smaller guys to penetrate the markets.
I mean, Tando spoke earlier about black industrialists. And obviously, being in South Africa, you'd know that there's as well the BBB codes that have as well recently been amended. But looking at your website, you've got one black person who's into finance. I mean, would you say, are you tapping into the space of black industrialists?
We as an organization, you know, you obviously have only looked at one of our subsidiaries. We have sort of in the vicinity of 3,500 employees.
Okay.
I don't know the exact number. Maybe somebody from the office can phone in and give us the exact number, but I'm pretty sure we've got less than 100 white employees.
Because I was actually looking at the group itself. I mean, being the management, according to the organic structure.
Yes, that's the group holding company,
okay.
The board of that.
Mm.
And it's the executive committee, I think, that you're looking at. If you look at our board, you know, but we as a company that operate across markets,
mm-hmm.
we often have to answer this question: how many expatriates do you have working for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then in a country like Zambia, we might have 10 expatriates, of which 5 are Swazis and 2 are Mozambicans and 1 is a South
yeah,
African.
That's true. Yeah.
So it's quite varied with us.
Mm-hmm.
We're fortunate in the sense that we as an organization started in Swaziland in 1982 as a Swazi company.
Who's the founder of the company?
Originally, a guy called Carl Persson,
okay.
he sold out decades ago.
Oh, nice.
I haven't even met him.
So,
then the company used to belong to a Danish conglomerate that sold to a group of local shareholders in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
But we're fortunate in the sense that we grew up in Swaziland as an organization. So a lot of issues that are dealt with in other markets is legislated in Swaziland for a start.
Okay.
But it's something that, you know, it's not really an issue to us.
Mm.
Our local entity in South Africa, for example, as under the previous code, I get the names wrong, the BBBEE
yeah.
code, we were a level 2 contributor.
Okay.
So the new code has changed that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I checked this morning in South Africa, for example, 46% of our employees are female.
Hmm.
So I was surprised to see such a high number. Group-wide, we're at about 14% with females, whereas the clever people tell me one should be aiming at least 20%.
Yeah. Okay.
But in the construction industry, it's not a traditional market where you get people to look at.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, in our organization, group-wide, we've tried over the last decade to foster a culture of learning. Yeah. And that you can be anything if you enable yourself, you can be anything. And with our growth, that's created massive opportunities.
Okay. So now, I mean, looking at the countries that you've been in, let's compare them. I mean, for you, obviously, I know Swaziland would be the first because you originate from there. Let's say give me the top three or the top four in terms of doing business from the countries that you guys are currently operating in.
Are you referring to how difficult or how easy or how profitable or not?
Okay, maybe let's start with the difficult one and let's come with the easy one. And the profitable one will be the last one. Yeah.
I must say a country like Mozambique is difficult for us in the sense because it is a Portuguese-speaking country, so that holds challenges. So I would perhaps rate that as one of our more difficult markets.
Okay.
We've been in Uganda. We did projects there, and that was not easy. Mm-hmm. We've also done projects in Tanzania. That was also difficult.
Okay.
So Mozambique, Tanzania, Uganda, tough.
The difficult ones. Okay.
Zambia was surprisingly easier than we anticipated.
I love Zambia.
Friendly people.
Yes.
The advantage in Zambia, obviously, is language. Mm-hmm. It's mainly an English-speaking country because I always get this wrong, but there are like 30 different dialects being spoken in the country. So
that's true.
Everybody speaks English because at least you can communicate. I think that helps a little bit.
Mm.
But it's a big place.
Yeah.
You know, and the infrastructures, 10 years ago when we went there, infrastructure wasn't great. It has improved a lot. Botswana, I think, might be in some sense one of the easier markets. Namibia also, some of the easier markets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in South Africa, it can either be easy or difficult. It depends which portion of the market you refer to. It's a massive market.
I'd love to hear your opinion, though, as how has it been? Has it been easier? Has it been hard? And, I mean, which market you play in?
I would think that in South Africa, it's probably one of the easier markets in the sense because the stuff's here.
Mm.
It's easier to do business because you can buy stuff here.
Okay.
You know, on average, the clients are more sort of emancipated, more developed,
mm-hmm.
But more sophisticated. Their systems work a little bit better. They might pay a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and their own administration might be a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't say it's easy. The problem of barriers, you know, is a massive problem.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's across all our markets.
Mm-hmm.
One just finds that you know, if you go into rural Tanzania, for example, if they want to build a road there, the small guy just looks over the fence. He doesn't get the opportunity.
Mm. Yeah,
there's no chance for him to enter that market, and they've sort of made peace with the fact that that's a barrier that they'll never cross.
Mm. Yeah.
But that's not good for the economy in the long run.
That's true.
So if you have a developing economy and an economy that wants to take the next step, like the South African economy, mm-hmm. then you can't have that defeatist attitude to say, oh, but, you know, we'll never be able to do that.
Mm.
There we have to man up and say, well, we will.
Mm.
And we need political courage from the client bodies.
Yeah,
to stand
true.
Up and say, okay, so what must we do?
Mm.
And then they must do something courageous. You know, and it won't be easy.
Yeah. So now here, are you in South Africa, are you more doing public tenders or you're more into private sector?
The bulk of our work in South Africa has been for the public sector.
Okay.
You know, roads, some shopping center, hospital refurbishments.
Like which ones?
So the Hemingway's Mall in East London.
Okay.
We built that some years ago. We did. We were fortunate to do the renovations on the Nelson Mandela Memorial Museum in Umtata.
Oh, okay.
We did that. That was very prestigious for us.
Mm-hmm.
In Letaba, we refurbished a hospital and did some work there. We're currently busy with a road contract in Limpopo.
Oh, that's nice.
And on the N4 bypass of Nelspruit, we built a piece of that. You know, something that we're very proud of. Mm. In Sybrand van Niekerk, water purification works in Western area. We did a fire station in Alberton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so lots of things in the all around in across the whole market.
Okay. So now, I mean, part of that, I mean, right now, I know particularly in South Africa, I don't know in other countries, it's mainly encouraged that you develop, small business. I mean, you spoke about a small man that's looking over the fence, that has no chance. But, I mean, how many small businesses are you giving a chance in terms of the company, you know, not only in South Africa, but across The different countries that you serve.
So our whole business model has evolved to, picking up the little guys around us, making them bigger,
mm-hmm.
and taking them with us on the journey. You know, if in 2004 we did 100 million rand turnover as an organization.
Okay.
We had 336 employees, and we had one. We sold one product in one country to one client. We built roads for the Swaziland government in Swaziland, Lilangeni. We've grown from that to this year. We hope to be in excess of 1.8 billion rand.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've said, 3,500 employees. And we're in many markets.
Mm-hmm.
That growth has only been possible because of partnerships, relationships, and entities that we've brought with us.
Mm.
We've created, in some of our markets, we've created our biggest opposition. You know, an employee that worked for us in 2003, in 2003, he wanted to start his own business.
Okay.
We sold him one of our second-hand machines. He resigned, started his own business, and we hired the machine back from him. Well, you know, you have to do something. Mm-hmm. You have to act with courage. Otherwise, you're not going to get development.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Within 6 months, we sold him another machine, and he bought two other machines. We gave him a letter that he could take to the bank, and he bought more equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And today, he's a substantial business in Swaziland. Roots Construction is one of our biggest opposition companies.
Yeah,
there's another company. A guy was our commercial manager.
Mm-hmm.
A really good quantity surveyor.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be one of the faces on our board that would be, of the complexion that you'd prefer, perhaps. But he also wanted to start his own thing, and rather than pick a fight with him, we bought his first premix plant.
Who, Michael?
We gave it to him.
Yeah.
Rented him it back from him.
Mm-hmm.
Gave him a subcontract on one of our projects, and today he's our biggest opposition.
Wow.
Kukanya Civils in Swaziland is our biggest opposition.
Mm. Okay, give me a story in South Africa. Obviously, I'm about to be modest, guys. I'm South African, Yeah.
No, so we've only been in South Africa for a short period of time.
How long?
We entered the market in 2009 by buying an existing company,
mm-hmm.
Trying to change their attitude to reflect our DNA, our way of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
That's an inclusive, team-oriented approach. We weren't successful. And then sold them in 2012. So... and that went with a restraint of trade. So we weren't in the market for some time, and mm-hmm. we only returned to the market in 2014, late 2014. So, visit one of our sites and you will see several smaller subcontractors that work with us,
mm-hmm.
And we grow them. And once we have a subcontractor that can provide some service, definitely goes to the next project with us. Or if we start another project, we ask, do you have capacity to go and work elsewhere?
Mm.
So there are several examples of that.
Mm.
Our growth, luckily, has given us the opportunity to do that. But without the assistance of subcontractors that walk the road with us, we wouldn't have been able to do that.
Is it? No, maybe Bulenda, I need to be their success story in South Africa. so that, when you've been asked the question, you're able to answer that. I mean, Thando, Mr. Pina has made mention of a couple of interesting things. Now, when you spoke about black industrialists, I've heard people speak about manufacturers, producers and all of that. In the construction space, are we black industrialists? Where do we stand?
Sure.
I'm sure you want to know that, friend, too, Franz, eh?
Yes, sure.
Yes.
Look, I suspect there's no limit in terms of the sector in which we can have our black industrialists, right?
Oh, okay.
But I imagine there are some priority sectors where you have real opportunities for entrants that are also quite inclusive in terms of job creation, etc. And so the focus tends to be on agro-processing sectors, farmers that go into production and then packaging and then selling on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a range of issues there as well. I mean, what we're kind of saying is that, and I think Francis mentioned this issue of BE and kind of that form of inclusion, is that what we're saying is that there's a bit more to the picture, right? So BE shares have been an important step in the country in terms of affirmative action, but there's a little bit more to it. And that comes from the fact that that creates a dependency to some extent, right? So what that means is that you get to share or be part of the ownership of existing enterprises. Rather than what we are proposing, or at least what we're saying, is that we need to add a layer of new enterprises, South African enterprises, black enterprises, mm-hmm. and they can be in construction, and they can be youthable. They can start to compete in the sector as well. And I think the story is a classic case of an underdog in a construction sector, which we all know has got some giants in it. And so it's quite interesting to hear how they try to overcome their challenges. So there's certainly no limitations, mm-hmm. But it's particularly hard in some sectors. You know, in construction, that there was a cartel that operated mm-hmm. For a number of years, where tenders were, or bids were being rigged for some of the very large government projects, including the 2010 World Cup stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
And what you know about cartels, or what the theory tells you, is that they also try to keep out entry. That's how they survive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it means it's increasingly impossible for someone else to come in mm-hmm. To get a share of some of those deals or some of those jobs. And so those are the kind of challenges there. So I think the policy framework rightly cuts across sectors. And even our research then, although focuses on certain sectors,
mm-hmm.
As mentioned, also has implications for others, including things like construction, where we are seeing some upstarts coming in, but finding it difficult to really get the big meaty jobs.
Mm.
And it takes them years to get settled, which is very difficult. And so you have funding constraints, for instance, because the funder won't fund you for a risky project where some of your intended clients haven't even committed yet,
right?
Which is what we propose. We say, well, then why not make the funds available from the fines from cartels to support businesses at low interest, long-term risk-bearing, where you're prepared to take the risk on some of the small firms and give them a chance to grow, to test different approaches, to try different business models, and to hopefully over time then, through learning by doing, develop their capabilities,
yeah.
which isn't often granted to small firms.
Yeah. But this is, that's an excellent idea, and mm-hmm. I agree 100%, but what we also need is we need big business to buy into this
mm-hmm.
and to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, government can't take that business risk on its own
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
government can't teach somebody ought to be a contractor or a construction company.
Mm. Yeah.
But a construction company can.
Mm.
And government must somehow use their political power and political will to enforce that. Similar in the agribusiness.
Mm.
You know, if somebody is vertically integrated, a massive organization in and he has everything from feedlots to feed supply companies and the whole range, they can teach the upstart. Government must incentivize them.
Yep.
To teach the upstarts.
Mm.
And that's where business needs to transform their minds.
Mm.
Buy into the idea because it'll be good for us.
Yeah. No, I think gentlemen, this conversation shouldn't end here. Maybe SUJ, you need to open up your platform. I'll come, I'll invite Mr. Pina, and let's have conversations around this industry, because it's something that I think it really needs to be discussed and talked about. I'll bring government if I need to bring government. I'll bring media, definitely, you know. And more than anything, I think I want to have you as well for my TV show, and let's have these discussions and definitely expand. But more than anything, I think let me take this opportunity to thank you for coming to the show today. It's always that when you're having a good time would actually run out. Maybe is there something that you want to say in closing?
I'm encouraged by this lady's efforts.
Okay.
From nowhere, she's decided, I want to do something, and it'll be hard work and it'll be tough. I'll make a difference. And that's the only way we all are going to make it.
Mm.
Okay. Do the hard miles.
Is it? My brother?
Sure. Our simple point would be that the evidence is there. Where you have entry, where you have new people participating in the economy rather than your kind of established giants, you see benefits to consumers. If you think about low-cost carriers that have come in and made it really cheap to fly to different parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
You think about Capitec and how that's increased access to financial services. Mm-hmm. Point is, we can make the difference. And it's about setting up our policy, not more regulation, but better regulation to arrive at those outcomes. And I think we can get there. And like as Franz says, it's kind of a concerted effort, both from government, but also the incumbent players that's required.
Nice. Ma'am?
From my side, I would say that we need to take it in our own hands and make sure that we impact, we impart knowledge, and we empower our communities.
Mm.
That's it from me.
I like that. Mr. Bala.
Get things done.
What am I saying? I mean, a little more persistence, a little more effort, and what seems hopeless, failures may tend to glorious success. When you fail, I always say a measure of a man is not how many times you fall, but whenever you fall, how many times you get up and actually dust yourself I mean, right now, I'm sure Mr. Franskin could actually give us examples of how many times they fail or some of the challenges that they've had. Same goes for our guests. But at the end of the day, they didn't let that define that or define themselves. But in fact, they decided to define the situation. So sitting down and feeling sorry for yourself, it's not going to help. So get up, and like my brother has said, get things done. That is all we had for you today, right here on 360 Biz, cliffcentral.com. Catch us again next time for another exciting installment of 360 Biz. My name is Deborah Mafodi. I'm out.
This is cliffcentral.com.